Before we dive in, two things. First, thank you. Listeners like you are why we do this. Our team works hard on every episode to ensure we bring you the best content possible. Second, it's a gift-giving time of year. People ask us all the time, what's your setup or what's your favorite gear? We put all of our favorites together in our new Generation Leader gift guide. Find recommendations for those hard to buy for people on your list and get them something great this year. Find the gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift and we'll keep this up to date all year round. All right, let's get on with the show. On the Little League field, we were competitors. In college, we became friends. And over the last two decades, I've watched Brian get started in his professional career, where he spent the majority of his time starting new ventures in some highly challenging contexts and also championing those who are willing to do the same. He is a passionate guy. He's passionate about doing hard things in a healthy way. And he's spent the last decade with more proximity to generosity than the average person will in their lifetime. One thing I think makes Brian's perspective so impactful is how he's seeking to create a more generous future. I'm excited for today's conversation and for you to hear some of Brian's lessons from leadership and also what he's learning in starting a new venture focused on generosity. Let's dive into today's conversation with Brian. Welcome to the New Generation Leader Podcast. We're giving you the tools you need to lead in the digital world. Ready to reach your true potential? This is the New Generation Leader Podcast. Thinking about change and transition, you're kind of in a season of transition yourself.
Yeah.
What's that journey been like for you as you look back and look forward?
Yeah. Change is, I think, a lot of times romanticized, and it's a lot more difficult and scary when you're in the midst of it. You know, for context, you spend more time preparing, last 14 years of my life preparing to start a church and then starting a church and putting in your living room and having it grow and go from a coffee shop, you know, all these different places to eventually buying a building and renovating it. And especially, I think, when my wife and I started that journey, we had no kids. I was 25. She was 23. We did not have much life experience. And so I think particularly the change is like when you go from starting something so young and handing it off, it's kind of like sending a kid off to college way earlier in your life than you anticipated or something like that. And I think as you look back, trying to make sense of what did you do well? What did you not do well? Did you transition well? Could you have done things better? I think as you get more and more removed, the increased like clarity as well as like yearning to have done the absolute best that you could have done and seeing how things go in the absence of your leadership.
Yeah. So looking back, what's that memory journey like for you in going down memory lane and thinking, what if we had done this or what if we had done that? How is that impacting and how are you reacting to looking back like that after having just made the transition?
That's a really thoughtful question. It's been something I've been processing a lot. I mean, I think like a lot of people who start things and are driven, the instinctual place that I go to when I do exactly what you just described is regret. Oh, I wish I could have done this, which would have been better. And it's been interesting. One of the best decisions I made in this transition was I got connected to a counselor and have done like literally weekly counseling for the last like 6 months, pretty much like every Friday. I'm meeting with a counselor and she's been like amazing. And my wife has been with her as well. And she made a really helpful observation that sort of like is a bit of a buffer against that kind of like dark place of regret that you can go to. Where she was like, you grew up creating and building this thing. Like you became an adult doing this. And when we grow up, we're fundamentally clumsy. We make mistakes. You know, an appropriate way to look back on your journey is not sort of taking all the good things you did for granted and focusing on the bad things and being like, if I only knew, I'm 38 now. You know, oh, if I'd acted like 25 with all the wisdom experience that I have now at 38, oh, I would have gone like this, this, this. That's a dissociation from reality. That's not even possible. And so that's been really helpful to process everything that we did through a more realistic lens.
I can't say that I haven't looked back at similar time frames in my early mid-20s and thought, I more often think, what in the world was I thinking at that point?
Yeah.
There is so much life and experience and insight that we gain along the way. And I'll ask you the question that I ask everybody that really started this journey was, we'll come back to this later, but what have you learned that you wish you had known earlier that you could pass on to a younger version of yourself? And like you said, that's a little bit of a misnomer because it is in the growth journey that we do learn and we discover more. And, you know, I go back to my time working with teenagers and studying human development. 25, theoretically, your prefrontal cortex still wasn't even completely developed.
Right. Yeah.
And here you were, you know, launching something new.
Yeah.
As you look back, it's fascinating for me, having known and watched your story and from afar, quite literally, most of the way across the country. You know, thinking back to where you started versus what the chapter was that you just closed and what the church had grown to, flip that question and think about what you did learn and discover along the way. What are your key takeaways and your proudest moments from the last 15 years?
You know, it's funny, as you were talking, I was thinking about, in some ways, you hope your entire life is looking back on yourself 2 years ago and being like, man, I was a complete idiot, right? Because that means you're growing. If you're constantly being like, what in the world was I thinking? But I think that to answer that kind of initial question about what's the biggest thing I would tell myself is that you're going to be clumsy doing this. You know, I think at 25, you start something, you don't have a track record of success. You don't really know, are you good at this? Are you not? I mean, even like you study the psychology of entrepreneurs and people who just do hard things. A lot of times you're coming from a lot of maybe instability or pain or burden, and you're kind of like, hey, I'm going to create this thing that's going to fix the deepest angst in my heart, and it's going to be great. I wish, like when I do coaching or talk to people who are younger and starting things, to be like, hey, this is the first time you did this, and the first time we do anything, we're not very good at it. And that's part of the journey towards greatness. That is sort of the ordained path towards greatness. Is you're going to be clumsy, and we're just practicing and figuring this out. I mean, a major shift for me was actually having kids and seeing the development of my own kids and seeing the way my kids learn. My oldest daughter, the first time I taught her to learn to ride a bike, that experience is full of failure. They're crashing into chain link fences and screaming they can't do it and all sorts of stuff. You know, and they make it 10 feet and then they collapse and go over the handlebars. And as a dad, you know, my posture towards her is not like, come on, you idiot. Why can't you get this on the first try? There's actually a deep sense of pride of like, gosh, look at you try and have the courage to get back up again and try again after failing. Like the way you learn to, you know, bike miles upon miles is there's no other way other than that. I wish that what I would have told myself is like, that's the way it's going to go. You're going to be clumsy, you know, learn from these mistakes, stay humble, stay teachable, put wise people around you and just keep going and have the grit, you know, make your way through 10,000 little failures. If you even want to label them as failures. I mean, again, it's just sort of the ordained path towards, you know, creating something significant. I think what I'm most proud of is the things that I think I took for granted on the front end or assume would be given, which was not having scandals, leading with integrity, and my wife and kids still really, really loving me and liking me, I think, most of the time. Now that I'm around a lot of different types of leaders and, you know, people who have started all sorts of different things, you see that like that's not a given. It's a really, really hard thing. And so I think that's what I'm most grateful for, as well as like most proud of, is starting something, growing it, having to be successful, handing it off, and, you know, doing so with integrity and doing so in such a way that like my wife and kids are still like loving me and in my life.
And they're still there for the ride.
Yeah, that's right. And willing to do it again, you know?
Yes. So talk about, you are jumping into something new in this new season. You're diving back in square one.
Yeah.
Launching something new.
Yeah.
Going back to this journey. But now you have 15 more years of life experience going into that.
Yeah.
What's different this time for you?
Yeah. So I mean, a little background of what we're creating. When I decided to step out of the church, I told our elders and I told them it was going to be like 6 months to try to help them make the transition as healthily as possible and, you know, not be like, you got to figure this out in 2 weeks. One of the people I reached out to was a friend of mine who actually plays in the NBA, Mason Plumlee. He played at Duke. I met him when he played for the Nuggets and he plays for the Charlotte Hornets right now. I knew he did a bunch of entrepreneurial and venture stuff and was just like, hey, if you know of anything, I'm going to make a transition in 6 months. Can you keep me in mind? And he's like, well, I've had this idea and I've been looking for somebody to run it. Would you be interested in trying that and doing that? And I was like, yeah, that'd be really cool. you know, at the heart of what we're trying to do is make people helping people as easy as possible. Like, we envision frictionless generosity, technological innovations to empower frictionless generosity, because kind of our presupposition is that a lot of times people want to help other people, but there's just major points of friction that prevent them from actually acting on that. You know, what are they going to do with the money? Am I going to embarrass you? I just don't have time for a 15-minute social interaction after I've purchased your meal or something like that. Or maybe you just prefer to stay anonymous. But we feel like there's real power in unlocking, one, just sort of the generous pay it forward experience and like the entrance of a generous dollar into the ecosystem of a business and how it has kind of the power, this multiplying effect within a business, as well as we're on the back end of another series of national tragedies. And people all the time are like, I wish I could do something. And I think a lot of people want to do something and they just don't know how. And I think what we envision ourselves as being a solution to help people just make the world a better place and keep it as simple and easy as possible. I think now, 15 years removed from starting something, what's different? I think like a little bit more differentiated, to be honest. The first time I started something, my wife and I joked like this was giving birth to our first child. The church we started was our child, and it just feels like enmeshment in the truest sense, right? You don't know where you start and stop and where the organization that you're starting starts and stops, which leads to a crazy amount of pain. It can be helpful in terms of you being like, I will die before this thing dies, and leads to a lot of times creating something and leading to it being successful. But it leads to tremendous psychological, mental, emotional pain. So I think just a little bit more of a healthy differentiation of being like, hey, this really matters. I'm going to absolutely work my butt off to make this thing great. But it's not an extension of my personhood or something like that. I think it actually makes me a better leader to see it for what it really is and go on the journey of like being the best founder I can be.
How have you seen that similarity with other founders you've been learning from or coaching, that me and the business that I'm starting are one and the same?
I see it all the time. I almost don't know if it's possible to not see it that way, especially the first time you found something. Again, you don't have the experience. You don't have a track record. A lot of time, you don't have a family, to be honest. You know, like, you know, most founders probably are not married. They don't have kids. And you're going all in, right? You're borrowing money from anybody and everybody. You know, the friends and the family and the fools, you know, are giving you money and you have no track record. You're kind of like, I don't know what I'll do if this thing doesn't succeed. There's no boundaries. You're working at all times, as well as it becomes, I think, you know, being an entrepreneur becomes one of those professions that becomes synonymous with your identity. You know, there's professions that you get introduced at parties, and that's like the first thing they say about you. And there's professions that aren't like that. I don't mean any shade on somebody who works at Target, but somebody probably isn't introduced at a party being like, hey, this is Brian. He works at Target, you know, but you're an athlete, you're a pastor, you're a doctor, you're a founder, an entrepreneur, you found something. That's going to be in the first breaths of the way that somebody gets to know you. This is so-and-so, and this is what you do. And the repetition of that experience leads to an organization and you as a person becoming enmeshed and being like, I don't know where I start and stop. I don't know where this thing starts and stops. And the pain of the organization becomes your pain. Successes of the organization become your successes. And it's real. I always see it. I almost never don't see it. So it's very, very normal.
So let's sit on that for a minute. There's maybe something deeper about that trailblazing, go get them, get after it persona that, you know, often gets held up as the ultimate goal of, hey, we should all want to start something.
Right.
It's making headlines, the covers of magazines on Fast Company, Inc., yeah. Entrepreneur. How have you seen your gifting and wiring and how you think and process being different from, you know, even Mason in this new venture or somebody set some people up to be naturally gifted towards starting something new and other people to take a different seat on that bus?
Yeah, definitely. Here's just my experience. I'm not trying to paint in broad strokes and I'm not trying to in veiled ways allude to things in my own journey. But I think that on the whole, what a lot of times people who found things come from are destabilized, painful environments. The way that a lot of times people respond to destabilized, chaotic environments, you know, so maybe we're talking about your family of origin, we're going to get into like family system theory and stuff like that. what most people do is respond to chaotic environments through being chaotic. And a few people respond to chaotic environments, maybe of their family of origin, through creating and being like, I'm going to create something where nobody has to experience the pain that I experienced. Like, I was in a room of high level leaders recently. We were kind of sharing our stories. And that was the common thread, was that like all of us, the first thing we founded was a response to like childhood stuff. I think from your earliest memories, experiencing pain and being like, I'm going to create something. You know, these delusions of grandeur from your earliest memories of like, I'm going to create something that's going to make sure that I and nobody else has to experience this ever again, is just like a unique thread that I see in like high achieving founders. I don't completely understand it, but it's just there. And I think guys who do it see it in other guys and sort of a kinship in that. It's in no way trying to, you know, dismiss the significance or the contributions of people who are different. It's a bizarre similarity.
One of the tools that I use with teams in coaching that I think has brought a lot of clarity for me, and part of what I mentioned a few minutes ago that I've seen in myself back to my 20s, this tool has helped me illuminate it. And when we break down those different frameworks, part of what you describe is that trailblazing, pioneering personality type. And if the numbers are completely scientific and spot on true, which I think it makes sense that they do, you know, only 7% of the population has that kind of, there's an issue, let me solve it mentality.
Right.
It's not a power play, a level, an elitism. It's, hey, this is one way of thinking. And then at some point in the journey of this system, in this organization, in our lives, we've got to break this down and build relationships and build bridges.
Yeah.
And we need people who are gifted in that. And we need to get tactical and build up the system and the process. And we need people who are gifted in that. And all of it together is what makes it thrive.
Right.
But getting at that, let's solve something.
Yeah.
But also releasing ourselves, if we're not like that, to say, hey, I don't have to solve everything in front of me if that's not my natural skill.
Right. I've heard similar kind of data about that, right? Like it's somewhere in the single digit percents of the kind of person that experiences the problems in the world and their response is like, I need to go do something about that and create something to fix that. The majority of people are like, somebody else should fix that, or apathetic, or just don't even want to think about it, or whatever it is. And so I think to your point, it's not only a recognition of like, hey, is that a rare instinctual response to see a problem or to walk in a room and see an issue and be like, I'm going to go do something about that. I think a self-awareness and a relational awareness, but the vast majority of people in your life are not having the same experience. You know, their hierarchy of needs, their hierarchy of priorities are different. And so I think even a recognition of that, of like, hey, my experience is not everybody's experience, and I need to be empathetic towards that, and I need to figure out little bridges with that, is like absolutely essential.
So right now in this season, you mentioned a little bit ago, in that last role, starting the church, you were watching those learning opportunities, not just failures, but you were learning from them. And before we hopped on, you talked a little bit about this season of starting something new, and you're going through that cycle and that process. What's that like for you right now to be in, hey, I've identified something to solve, found somebody to collaborate with. Mm-hmm. Now what?
You know, in some ways it's a lot more fun because there's just a little bit more experience to be like, hey, you know, learning opportunities, but I'm like, can be crazy driven. So it's hard for me not to use the word failures. And in some ways the only failure is like, you don't learn something and you don't tweak it and grow it and improve it along the way. And I think what's been really amazing is in this new role, I've entered into a sphere of relationships with like objectively, unbelievably successful people, you know, people who've accomplished really great things, who have been really kind to, you know, share meals with me and be vulnerable about their own journey. And I think one of the common threads has been like the willingness to stay in that place of being humble, teachable, curious, tolerant to failure, not being the expert, not having all the answers. Again, I said this earlier, but I'll just say it again, is like really is the ordained path to growth. Like the journey to innovation is not like I had an idea, I launched it, a million people liked it. It's like 10,000 learning opportunities. I had I live in Denver, and in South Denver is a guy named Ken Denman. And Ken founded a company called Emotion, which was the startup that created the technology that eventually like was what Apple bought that unlocks your phone with your face. Like they were the ones who innovated this technology. And I'll get lunch with him every once in a while. And he'll just say these like little things that you just think about all the time. And we're having lunch. Tell me kind of where you are in this journey. What are you doing? And I was telling him all these questions that we were trying to answer and all these unknowns. And he just kind of leaned back. He was like, all right, it's time to start failing. It's time to start failing. Like, stop trying to like mastermind this perfect solution. Like, get something out there, fail quickly, fail fast, learn, adjust, pivot, grow it, you know? And I think just being on the other side of a lunch with somebody like that, I mean, he sits on the board of Costco and Motorola. I mean, like, he's just an objectively super successful person who now kind of in the last half of his life has not lost that. I think infuses in my experience now, like, hey, what we're experiencing of just learning and growing and being curious and clumsy is the way that something great is created.
So you have a small team right now, but how do you keep that momentum moving forward when something doesn't work and you're pulling that learning opportunity and pulling the whole team forward?
Yeah.
How do you inject that kind of DNA in people around you when, oh no, we messed up?
Right. You know, I think what I'm fortunate of now is that everybody in the team that we have has a lot of startup experience. So I'm not trying to pretend like I'm having to do something or do a lift that I'm not having to do. It's sort of a common understanding of like, this is the way it goes. You know, like once you've had some experience, you know, this is the way it goes. But I do have a lot of experience around failure and trying to help people process that. And I think honesty and availability are the key component. The honesty of naming the thing that everybody else can see. I think people can almost handle anything when we're honest about it. And we kind of are like, hey, this is what's really going on. Hey, I'm scared too. Hey, I'm frustrated also. I'm angry also. If you want to talk about it, I'm more than available and I'd be happy to talk about that. I think that just sort of like the honesty, the transparency, the availability, some proximity, you know, breeds that like, hey, we're two people trying to figure this out together. Just because I might be leading this thing doesn't mean I'm immune to the fears that you're having. This is part of the way that this journey goes. And if it scares you, it scares me too. Let's talk about that.
That's a really important insight that, you know, so often there's an image or a veil of secrecy or,
yeah,
hey, we can't talk about this because that might damage our reputation. Or it might knock me down a few levels in this competition and rise for perfection and achievement. And what if I fail more than the person next to me? Am I going to be the next one on the chopping block? And that requires a different culture, like you said. And I love how you highlighted honesty, transparency, availability. Let's talk about it. Let's flesh this out.
It's interesting. I actually picked this up from child psychologist that I knew. And I was having a conversation with her about how do you talk to your kids about hard things. And she made the comment, she said, children are way more resilient than we give them credit for. If they're guided through something hard by an available, honest adult, what a kid cannot handle is being lied to, you know, and having that experience where you're, you know, you're 22 and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, mom had said this, but it was actually like this. That's what really messes up a kid. And I think you extrapolate that and apply that to adult today and, you know, people who are working today, I think it's kind of the same thing. People are way more resilient than we give them credit for. What throws them off is like secrets. Being told that something isn't good is fine when all of us in the deepest recesses of our heart is this isn't going well. That does something to people. But a leader who can be honest and available and really kind of human to human, heart to heart, hey, we're feeling and seeing the same things, but it's going to be okay. Here's why. I think taps into the long history of stunning human resiliency.
One of the things that we talked about, another conversation we had before we hopped on was about that continual learning process.
Yeah.
And that whole framework, it brings its best to us and to the people we lead when we do look at growth opportunities and recognize we're all on this lifelong journey. Let's not stop and think we've got it all together.
Right.
Because every new person, every new relationship, every new team we're on, let's be honest, every new year that we face and everything going on around us is going to bring new dynamics that we've got to figure out how to react and respond to.
Yeah. Like I mentioned to you, one of the people I've listened and read to a little bit, she recently passed. Her name is Marianne Diamond. And I think she did like brain science at Cal Berkeley for a long time. She talks about five components of basically remaining healthy for your entire life or as long as possible in your life. And one of the key components is the willingness to be a lifelong learner. that's what contributes to neuroplasticity. We can learn things way beyond age 6 or 10 or 18. We can learn our entire lives. The challenge is the willingness to stay in that space. The more accomplished you get, the more painful it is to learn something new, right? Because you're willing to look foolish when you're 40 and you have a real track record. I'm teaching my oldest daughter to ski right now. I took her up for her birthday on Friday to go skiing. And I saw this guy who was like super athletic. Like he was probably in his 40s. And he was like very obviously skiing for the first time in his life. And it was like him and then like a bunch of kids who were like looking foolish. And I was so freaking proud of this guy. I kind of regret now as I'm telling you the story, I didn't go encourage him. I should have done that. Because like the courage it takes to be around a bunch of kids looking foolish to learn something is like the essential component of remaining healthy for your entire life. And again, it's not just on the ski slopes or learning a new hobby. To your point, we're always growing. We're surrounded by new people, new opportunities, new learning experiences, new work relationships that are invitations rather than pretending to be the expert with all the answers, to be curious and to be humble and to grow so we can be the best person, the best leader we can be.
Yeah. Thinking about teaching my youngest to ski, I don't know how much teaching there was going on because I am by no means an expert skier, but watching her, I remember that day thinking the first time down the slope, wow, this is going to be a long 4 hours with this lift ticket. And we got to the bottom the first time, we went back up to the top and then it was like, boom, she got it.
Yeah.
And there is just something so fascinating about watching kids. I think as you talked about looking back to your experience of starting something 15 years ago, now here you are walking that journey again, but also being able to watch other people walk through their own journey and humanize not just the perfected, glossy, headline story version that we often get, the social media version, but
right,
sitting down, having a conversation, like the kinds of conversations you're having with Ken. It's not flashy. It's not a headline kind of event. It's, hey, let's sit down and have a conversation and talk about not just copying and pasting his lessons to you. Let's look in a mirror. How can I take my lesson, hold up a mirror for you and allow you to see yourself and your own growth opportunities in that and build from that to a brighter future?
It's the power of vulnerability versus projection. Projection and pretending harms because, you know, Ken could have sat down. He's objectively more successful than 1% of the 1%. Like, it's amazing what he's accomplished. And he could have use that opportunity to sort of elevate himself and leave me with a feeling of there's something deeply flawed and inferior about me, that every problem I'm having, every stumbling block I'm hitting in this journey, every question that I'm asking is a reflection that like I am deeply broken and I will never do what he has done. But rather than projecting, he was vulnerable and let me into his experience. We're both elevated in that space of being like, oh gosh, me too. You know, like you failed, I can do that. You learn from your failures. Anybody can do that. Anybody can fail and learn from their failures and improve. That's accessible to anyone and everyone. All you got to have is like a little bit of grit. I think the true trademark of the highest level leader, I think a lot of times we think the highest level leaders are the people who don't have any more questions and have no problems and have no shortcomings. Really, the people at the top are the people who are humble and vulnerable and determined and don't see conversations as some sort of competition to win, to validate their own value.
Yeah, learning is the journey that never stops.
Yeah.
And the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we've covered a lot of ground. I got two more questions for you.
Okay.
One is going to be easier than the other. Okay. But I'll give you the hard one first.
Okay.
I'm going to shift that question that I always ask. Based on your experience and now you're coaching and in conversations with other entrepreneurs and leaders, what's the number one insight from your experience that you are now passing on to other leaders?
As you can probably tell from this conversation, the thing that I feel like I talk a lot of times about, the willingness to be clumsy, and that's part of the journey. The other thing that comes to mind, and it's a lot of what my coaching centers on, you're going to need to develop the skill of leading with heart if you're going to really accomplish something really significant in a healthy way. You know, I think a lot of times really driven people, if you think about kind of who you are through, you know, three components, there's a head to think, there's hands to do, and there's a heart to feel. Those really driven people tend to dismiss the heart part, because it's intangible or, you know, a lot of times it's not talked about. And I just have this incredible conviction that nobody can really be successful in terms of the true definition of success if they don't really develop the skill of emotional relational health. And I think culture is increasingly trending to a place of there is an intolerance, and I think a justified intolerance, towards the extremely gifted, extremely strategic leader who lacks empathy and humility and ability to be relationally healthy. So I think learn how to develop the skill of leading with heart would be the most important thing.
That's a mic drop comment right there. So
thanks.
So I'll wrap with the easy question. You're getting started with AGC, launching that. How can people follow along with you and the journey of what you're doing in and out of AGC?
Yeah, sure. All my socials, all my personal socials are just my name, Brian Barley, Brian with a Y. Our AGC website is helloagc.com. And that can lead you to all our socials as well. We do most of our stuff on Instagram. We're doing some really cool, generous experiments, and we're getting ready to do some real storytelling. Some significant figures who demonstrate really unique generosity. And a lot of times that captures the heart of what we're trying to stimulate and empower as well. So yeah, you can go to our Instagram or our website, helloagc.com.
Awesome. We'll link to all that in the show notes. And I'll tell you from just the first few posts on that AGC Instagram account, I am excited for the stories to come because of how you've already piqued my interest in how you're tackling generosity. I know it's come up a few times, not only internally for me, as I've been in a few situations, but I've been on a few text threads here just in the last couple of days, and people are trying to figure out, how do we be generous? How can we have a radical generosity and share something with the world around us?
Yeah.
And I think, as you talked about, that combination of emotional intelligence and humility and passion with generosity, that's a game changer right there. It's an exciting thing to be part of.
Yeah, we're really excited too. We can't wait to see what comes.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the conversation, Brian. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the New Generation Leader Podcast. Subscribe today on your favorite podcasting platform. Ready to solve your leadership crisis? Download the show notes and unlock your true leadership potential at newgenerationleader.com/podcast. Thanks for listening today, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the New Generation Leader Podcast. Thanks again for listening to today's show. Don't forget to check out the New Generation Leader gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift. Thanks to Brian, Jim, Jay, and the team behind the scenes. We'll see you next time on the New Generation Leader Podcast.